on the front line of freedom. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes. Visiting this week with 92-year-old Vern Jackson of Arroyo Grande on California's Central Coast, a long way from where he grew up in Madison, South Dakota, an even further journey from where he served with the 109th Combat Engineers, part of the famous Red Bull Division, the 34th Infantry Division in World War II. We got into North Africa a little bit, but we did not discuss the trip over there. And I guess that was memorable too, but not necessarily in a good way.
The first threat to life and limb was when we got aboard ship in New York Harbor and headed east, not knowing where we were going, but got aboard ship and we were part of a big armada. However, second day out, we were on the North Atlantic in February, the world's roughest ocean, the roughest time of the year, in a little World War I transport, which hauled mules in World War I. It was a very tiny ship, and our company, I think, filled the ship. I'm not sure. There wasn't another company there. There may have been some infantry or some other units, but that ship was tiny, and we did 45-degree rolls. Now, 45-degree, we were told that. I didn't measure them. We were told by the people who ran the ship, and the ship could have tipped over. Could have capsized, and we would all been gone. That was first threat to life and limb. The second would be in combat.
And that combat came in what was the first large-scale confrontation between American and German forces in all of World War II, the Battle of the Kasserine Pass, a two-mile gap in the Atlas Mountains where the Americans foiled Field Marshal Erwin Rommel and his Nazi forces. This all happened in February of 1943, and you were there. So what do you remember about that?
Oh, goodness gracious. I don't think I can be real brief and tell you. We had been on a flank working eastward in Tunisia. We had a couple of weeks to build a road for 10 miles or so, 15, maybe 20, 30. I don't have any real feel for it. We came around that morning, and they says, by night, we retreat over this whatever you build tonight. I happen to have been on guard duty the night before, and so we were in the, well, I don't remember how I heard the words. I don't know. Of the retreat, but that's what it was. In fact, there had been two Arabs with us that morning early. Claire and I had been on guard. Guy came in and volunteered to start a fire and heat some water for us. We were doing it, and he just took over and helped. Did our laundry, as a matter of fact. I wonder if he wasn't a spy checking things out. I suspect he was. As a matter of fact, such things as that caused some of our fellows to feel pretty free if they see a gentleman over on a hillside sitting there with his sheep, maybe. Target practice. Actually, it happened. There were some killed by guys that just felt that way about loners that were hanging around. Later, a guy came in with his camel. Again, I wonder. Morning after the retreat, we were sitting in our truck back, and there was a captain, an officer. He was trying to question an Arab, and the Arab would get him by the shoulders and plead. And he says, get away. Pushed him away. Two or three times. And finally he got kind of tired of it and he pulled out his 45 and shot the guy. Spun him around on the ground. Shot him in the back of the head and he went flat on the ground. That was all within. That was my first experience with that sort of actually seeing somebody killed at close range.
That kind of makes it hit home for you that you're living in a little different world now, huh?
Different? Much worse. Not locally, but what's going on over in Egypt right now is horrifying and terrifying, heartbreaking.
It sounds like you can empathize a little bit, or you can imagine what it's like because of some of the things you experienced.
Civilians were, if they were the enemy populace, they could be killed. We didn't worry about the fact that there might be a civilian standing by a soldier, and they got wiped out if it was appropriate.
Well, and later you would witness, I think, one of the most famous examples of that kind of balance between military targets and civilian importance when you got to Cassino, Italy. But what else about your time in North Africa really sticks with you? What are some of those images that you still see every now and again when you reflect?
Fortunately, we were a different generation. I'm not saying we were the great generation because you know my story. The great generation is the one that raised the soldier generation through the Dust Bowl and Depression years.
You feel more fondly about your parents and their generation than your own.
I feel that they are the ones that turned out a group of men who loved their country, were capable of going to war and dying for their country. Doesn't take anything away from the soldier, but it recognizes that people like, especially my parents, were very, very effective, hard working, no relief, and yet they were poor. No government help. They were very poor, but they were so ingenious in so many ways that we lived through the Depression and the Dust Bowl days without suffering, really. We more learned wisdom, I think, of true wisdom through it rather than suffering from it. Combat engineers have a different position in combat. You don't, you're handling dangerous things, and people get ill handling. Lifting minefields is dangerous. The time Kasserine that you talk about, the minefield that stopped them, stopped Rommel, was just below us immediately. We had been turned into infantry, issued ammunition and hand grenades and such, positioned on a hill above the valley. We couldn't actually see the valley from where we were because it was more mountain. But those mines stopped the Germans. Well, the Germans got that far, and heard them come up the valley all the way. The combat was coming up, and it got up just below us to that minefield, I think, and it stopped there. Well, a couple of days later, we were lifting those mines, and we loaded trucks with the mines. Hopefully, we took the detonators out of them. Of course, we did. Spider mines, they call them. They've got a kind of a weird framework over the top of them, which catches the tank threads and presses on the detonator, which is in the center of the mine. We sent a truckload of those back up to the area where we had just retreated from. And one of our squads was unloading the truck and laying out a minefield. Something caused that truckload of mines to blow up. 12 men, one of them, the sergeant, was the furthest away. He was plotting out the minefields, and he was killed, but so was the entire squad. I was on the other end picking the mines up and loading the trucks. I have terrible feelings about it because, gosh, could we have missed something? That is my first real horror in the war, perhaps.
But certainly not the last. What are some of those other moments that have stuck with you all these years?
The bombing of a town, dive bombers, German Stukas, and they were not too far away, maybe 10 miles, but they were full, easy to see. Maybe it was less than that, too, I don't know. They came out over the top of us. We shot at them, and we had kind of sport almost, because we could see the tracer bullets curve seemingly up into them. Well, it drew their attention, and the 88 millimeters were positioned across quite a ways over on a high piece of ground, and they started shooting at us. And I had a nice deep foxhole, sort of a standing foxhole, so I was down. But the shells came in pretty thick and furious. One of them, fortunately, was a dud, lit just off the elbow of one of our guys. Only one guy was killed. One guy was killed by that. We shouldn't have shot at him.
But I'm sure that's a lesson that you learned at that point, huh?
No. Another time I wanted to shoot at him, but we didn't have time. Kasserine, the minefield, mm-hmm. One of the aircraft, and it was probably a Messerschmitt, came off the bombing run and was so low over us that we could see the pilot's face. I swear I saw him turn his head and look at us. But it was so quick, we didn't have time to get our guns out. And that meant darn quick. Now, that was not scary, but it was kind of close encounter.
I guess so. I know there's another time, too. You saw three airplanes coming at you, and were planning to shoot them down, too, until you realized that would be a bad idea.
So this is back in Africa. Yeah, my squad was building a road through the cactus patch. We had not seen any American fighters. We'd seen a few C-47s going high, and that's all we'd seen. While we're working in the Cascades Patch, here come three airplanes right straight at us, and quite low. And unhappily, my first gunner was headed for the cactus. We had gotten a transfer in from the regular army, who had some guts, and he and I were heading for the 50 caliber machine gun mounted on that truck, our truck, to take a shot at the guys. They were coming almost directly at us. We didn't get there. As they came in, they saw us, and they tilted their wings a couple of times, and we saw that they were American. But had they been German, and we had all the thrills of the possibility of their being German, it was one of those moments. We'd have been goners if they'd seen us.
And there are plenty of occasions like that where that happened. We've heard some of those stories. You mentioned being in the cactus patch, so the thought came into my mind. You spent a lot of time clearing cactus for roads, and you spent a lot of time clearing mines. What would you rather be dealing with, mines or cactus?
By all means, cactus. Cactuses, of course, were new to most of us. We'd never seen them before.
They don't have them in South Dakota, huh?
I don't remember any. These were very big things, too. They were 15 foot high, some of them, I suppose. And they were dense, quite dense.
Another pivotal moment for Allied forces in North Africa came in late April of 1943 when your division took Hill 609. In fact, if you read Rick Atkinson's book, Army at Dawn, that's a great read. It was another veteran of the North African campaign, Leo Wilde, that shared that one with me. Thanks, Leo. Anyway, Atkinson, if I remember correctly, calls the battle for Hill 609 the American Army's coming of age. What do you remember about Hill 609, and what made that hill so significant?
They just had a terrific view of a vast area. It was an outpost in that respect. Of course, it was protected. They had their pillboxes and foxholes and such, so that it was defended, but it was a vantage point for the Germans to track of us. We were headed for it one time with our mine detectors. There must have been five or six of us, and there it was, way up ahead, but high. And I don't think shots came from there, but they came from somewhere. And the bullets were zinging around us. Well, mine detector and all, we hit the ditch and hit it fast. That was one time. Scared? No, I don't think so. We just took action. We did our best. We had nothing really that we could get behind. We were fully exposed. We just got down low and pointed our helmets towards the oncoming rifle fire, hoping that it wouldn't get to us.
And I guess that's what I want to touch on as you talk about looking back and feeling like God protected you through a lot of things. Let's talk about some of those experiences. I just didn't want to gloss over anything in North Africa, because I know you ended up in Italy too.
And again, you found yourself witnessing history that so many around the world have discussed in the 70 years since. In this case, the series of battles in the first 4 months of 1944 around the famous Monte Cassino Abbey in Italy. Allied forces were convinced that the Germans were inside the abbey. There's been a lot of debate over the years about this. Some have said the Germans agreed to stay out of the abbey as long as any of the monks remained there.
Supposedly they weren't up there. I don't know. I don't really believe that. I think they must have been there, because it, again, was a viewpoint where they could observe a vast valley, and we were across that valley in at some altitude up a ways where our bivouac was, where the artillery. And combat engineers and the artillery bivouac generally in the same area. They spent their daytime in the undercover, maybe, or maybe they shot, the artillery did. But we, from that vantage point, actually watched the bombers went over us to bomb the abbey. We watched them bomb the abbey.
And for a while there, you thought they might be bombing you?
A flight of B-17s that went over us. And as they came, at least one of them opened the bomb bay doors. And it was where we could detect that the bomb bay doors were opening. And then little bombs started falling out, and they were coming right toward us. And that's quite a story, because we just moved into an area. We dug a garbage pit, 6 foot deep and 6 foot square. And when those bombs started coming down in our general area, that whole 6 foot square cube was full of humanity. I wasn't quick enough to get in there, so I had a mortar shell hole, which is maybe 12 inches deep at the most, 7 foot across, and I tried to get in that for protection. But the bombs fell short, so we didn't really hit. But it was an experience.
But how close did those bombs come to you? I mean, you guys are diving in the holes.
We heard them hit and blow up, but they were a mile away, maybe.
But there were moments where the threat of death came a whole lot closer than that. We'll touch on that when we return. And also remember one of the more than 400,000 Americans who did not come home from World War II. A man who Vern believes deserves to be recognized for his courageous sacrifice that may have saved the lives of others. By the way, if you ever find yourself in Pierre, South Dakota, that's the capital, of course, you can visit the South Dakota National Guard Museum and find many items that Vern donated for their display recognizing the 109th Engineers. Back with the rest of Hometown Heroes right after this.
Help us help a veteran. The Farney Automotive Group in Selma is supporting the Central Valley Honor Flight. A portion of the profit from every new and used vehicle sale in the month of August will be donated to help send our local veterans on an unforgettable trip to Washington, D.C. The Central Valley chapter is chartering flights in honor of their sacrifice and service to our country. Join the Farney Automotive Group in Selma and support our veterans for one more tour with honor.